ladies and gentlemen. This is Rose Moore with The Rose Moore Show, brought to you by www.alltalkradio.net in beautiful, beautiful downtown Las Vegas. With me tonight, Caroline is off tonight, but with me is our co-host, my husband, Rick Moore. So we'll start with our usual kiss. Ooh, good stuff.
Mr. Tagalong.
Mr. Tagalong. You're not Mr. Tagalong. You got a lot to say. A lot of people listen to you. Anyway, tonight is a very special night. We're, as you know, I'm the Nevada watchdog for the stimulus money for special education. Here in, we're working a lot with three specific districts. But the big one, which is the fifth largest in the nation, is the Clark County School District. And tonight, we have on the phone, waiting to be interviewed, is Candace. And she is the founder and director of the Advocacy Institute, a nonprofit organization dedicated to the development of products and services that work to improve the lives of people with disabilities. She is a parent of a young adult with learning disabilities and has been a disabilities rights advocate for 20 years, serving as a parent advocate and a trainer and an expert on special education policy and on advisory boards of several national organizations and federal projects. And we want the listeners to write this down, www.ideamoneywatch.com. And the Money Watch Project depends on dedicated parents and advocates across the nation to investigate and report on the use of IDEA Recovery Act funds. And without this help and support, this project would not exist. So, ladies and gentlemen, we'd like to introduce you to one of the fabulous people I know. She only has 20 years of advocacy under her belt. I've got 28. But she's kind of like just starting out. So, Candace, are you with us? Candace?
Yes.
Hi, you're going to have to speak up. We can't hear you.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
Yeah. I like that commercial. Can you hear me now? Yes, we can hear you. How you doing, Candace?
Good. I'm good.
Good. We got a lot to talk about.
Virginia.
Pardon me?
We're in snowy Washington, D.C.
I know. How cold is it?
It's about 20 degrees.
Ooh. Ooh. No, thank you.
Is that because of the weather or the politicians?
Both.
Candace, we'd like to get on with the show right away because after you come on, Mark is coming on, and he is the watchdog for Florida. And both his Florida Nevada watchdog was mentioned in the report that was given by the newspaper for the Wall Street Journal not too long, about a month ago. Along with a comment from our district, Clark County School District. So you're the pro here. So we're going to ask you tons of questions. Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay. First of all, turn my page.
One clarification. You have www.ideamoneywatch. Is it indeed just IDEA, or is it IDEA as well as...
No, Money Watch.
As well as... funds that come through Title I?
No. No, we really have just narrowed our focus to the IDEA funds that were part of the Recovery Act. There were several billion dollars for Title I, and there was also $5 billion for this Race to the Top discretionary grant program, which we've been hearing a lot about this past week because the state's applications were due on the 19th, and so we're hearing a lot about that as well.
I have a question for you, Candace. Why in the world? What led you to start the IDEA Money Watch Project?
Well, you know, we have been advocating for Congress to increase its appropriations for IDEA for many, many, many years. We've heard for decades from schools that the Congress never lived up to their commitment that they made when they first passed the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act in 1975 or the Handicapped Children's Act. So we've been working on that for many years, but then just to try to make the school folks happy with the funding. But when the Recovery Act gave us essentially what was the equivalent of full funding by doubling in 1 year the federal appropriation, I thought it would be a good time to see how what the districts did with the money, and also to give parents and advocates an opportunity to get involved in understanding what's happening to the money. Of course, a lot of interesting things have happened along the way that I never bargained for. So
yeah, I know.
We have found out, in fact, through the lens of many states, what in fact would happen if we were ever to get full funding of IDEA.
Not
because
good.
It wouldn't go to kids. It wouldn't go to improve services for kids with disabilities. We've pretty much learned that lesson.
And I think what we're seeing with just the stimulus money is just the tip of the iceberg of what's been happening for the last 40 years with monies that have been given to states and school districts, and the attitude that they have along with it. And since there has been virtually no accountability, they get away with a lot of things. I have been.
Do you find that true?
Yes, that's true.
Okay,
and,
I got a question for you. The stimulus money was intended for to be used for innovative and effective programs. But as we all know, this appears not to have happened. What have you seen, and what do you believe are the key lessons learned on this?
Well, the first thing that happened that none of us were quite prepared for, because we really hadn't paid much attention to it, was that the money from the Recovery Act for IDEA, in fact, triggered a provision in IDEA that allows local school districts to reduce their local spending on special education when an increase in federal funds occurs. And that reduction can be up to 50% of the increase. Now, that provision was negotiated and intended to occur when there it was a steady and consistent and relatively small increase from 1 year to the next in federal appropriations. And in fact, it was linked to a step ladder up of appropriations that is part of IDEA 2004. When we did all of that, we never intended to see a doubling of in 1 year and then a steep decline, because the Recovery Act funds were all included in FY09 appropriations, and then FY10 appropriations, which were just in December passed by the Congress, went right back to the same level as FY08. So we have this what a lot of people call a funding cliff, where we have this giant increase or doubling, and then fell right back down. Now the Recovery Act funds for IDEA can be spent over 2 years, so technically we won't really get to the funding cliff until the end of FY10. However, on Monday, the president releases his budget, his proposed budget, and we will see if the Department of Education is proposing any kind of an increase for IDEA for FY11. And if they don't, then we are really in for a funding cliff, a dive off a funding cliff.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Rose Moore with The Rose Moore Show. We have a very beautiful website for all of the parents that have learning disabled children. autism, traumatic brain injury, just a whole bunch of different problems that our children have in school, go to mydisabilitiesdepot.com. In that, you'll find all the types of games, books, videos, everything that you need to help your child. And be sure that you share this with the teacher of your child as well. And we also have a class that will be coming up in the next month called The Fundamentals of Special Education, K-12. And it is a 5-quarter credit class that was up at Seattle Pacific University to help all of our teachers become highly qualified, not only in the disabilities of what their children have in their classroom, but as well as learning about the law and what you need to know to help the child and to do everything that you can to help the parents. So, ladies and gentlemen, make sure you get on to www.mydisabilitiesdepot.com, and you'll be able to find all the books that you need. So, everybody, have a great evening. Hi, this is Rose Moore, and we're back with Candace, and she is in D.C. with 20 below. So I don't know what our temperature is here, but we're fine. We have short sleeves on and everything. How you doing again, Candace?
Hello.
Hello. Is it 20 below or 20?
It's 20.
20. Oh, okay. I used to live upstate New York about an hour from the Canadian border, so I'm used to saying 20 below. Sorry about that. It's only 20. Well, excuse us. Anyway, let me ask you a question real fast. There was a report that came from the government itself, and it's on ed.gov for our listeners, www.ed.gov. In it, it specifically says on the Clark County School District that the LEA, which is the local educational agency here in Clark County School District, the fifth largest in the nation, she was quoted as saying, and Candace, this one just really floored me. I couldn't believe it. But then again, it can. She said, we are not going to do new and innovative projects. We're going to do what's tried and true. Right after that, we dropped from 49th to 50th in the state.
In the nation.
In the nation, excuse me. In the nation. We are now 50th. We're at the bottom of the sewer, so to speak. What do you think of that comment?
Well, as far as Clark County School District is concerned, we have some data on Idea Money Watch about the performance of kids with disabilities in Clark County. And, for example, their rate of graduation from high school with a regular diploma for students with IEPs is 11%. 11%.
That's bad.
Their eighth grade proficiency rate in English language arts is 17%. And that is also true for their eighth grade math proficiency for kids with disabilities. So their performance is quite dismal, which is why it raises such concern when they chose, and this was their choice, they could have chosen not to do this, to reduce their local special ed expenditures by $14 million in light of the Recovery Act funds, instead of using all those funds to improve the performance of their kids with disabilities in that district.
Yes, and what I just found out this week, Candace, which I did not know, and usually I know just about everything, but I didn't know this. I checked with the state of Nevada on the proficiency test that they have to take in math, science, and reading. I find out that they have
this
reduced...
This is for graduation, right?
This is the graduation rate. The state of Nevada brought down the required amount of points that you need to have to below 50%. Now, on top of that, what I found out was that even though they may not pass that proficiency exam, each district in Nevada has their own criteria to help them pass the proficiency test to exit or graduate. We're still trying to find out what is this criteria. Have you ever heard of such a thing?
Well, a lot of states that have had instituted high-stakes graduation exams have had to do some retreating on them, in part for because several of them have had suits brought against them, particularly about by kids with, you know, on behalf of kids with disabilities. So, and they have also had to expand what kids can do beyond just a single test, like end of coursework and retakes and remedial instruction. So a lot of this is a consequence or a result of challenges that have been brought by parents and other advocacy organizations to challenge the single test high stake graduation exam that states have put into place. So
yeah, the one thing I do know is that when they were graduating, and this was just 2 years ago, they have a thing called a portfolio. Have you ever heard of that?
Yes.
And the portfolio is just like cut and paste onto some boards or something or in a book of the books you have read or the service hours you've put it in, nothing to do with passing the test. That's what they're doing here in Nevada. So we're looking at that to see, is this the criteria they're talking about? Because if it is, then we're going to start making some more noise. But let's get on with this. I have another question. Federal programs are focusing on expanding the role of the charter schools and virtual schools. And I love charter schools. I love virtual schools especially. Florida has been a leader in these areas. Candace, what is your experience elsewhere besides Florida?
Well, we have significant concerns with the focus of the Obama administration and the Duncan leadership at the Department of Education on charter schools, because there's tons of evidence to show that charter schools are not welcome to students with disabilities. And in fact, Dr. Tom Hare, who was a previous director of the Office of Special Education at the U.S. Department of Education under the Clinton administration,
Well, what I'm seeing here in the virtual schools, the district is not letting us get in there to find out what classes these kids can take, and we're finding them on that. It's like they need a password or something to get in, so that's a big problem. That shouldn't be happening. But the other thing is the charter schools, we had Edison. I don't know if you've heard of Edison schools. And a couple of years ago, what happened was that the Edison schools did such a poor job in the charter schools that the district's been leery of the charter schools and who's going in. Now, we do have Andre Agassi, you know, the famous tennis player, who put in right in the middle of the worst section of town a school, and it's beautiful. I mean, it looks like a junior college campus. And he has everything possible in there, and it's been given to them by, like, Bill Gates or the football teams or whatever they need. And so we've seen that. But when it comes to private schools, we're also seeing them specializing. But the school district will not recognize them. That's a problem we're having. Do you see that?
Well, you know, the charter school situation is very different from state to state because the charter school legislation is very state specific. And actually, one of the conditions of applying for a race to the top, making an application for the race to the top competition, was that your state could not have any caps on charter schools. And you might have seen some press that was critical of New York State because the New York legislature failed to raise the cap on charter schools, and therefore New York State was not able to apply for Race to the Top, which for them would have been around $700 million. So this charter school thing is going to be a big issue going forward. We have to keep a very close eye on it.
We will. Candace, what is the worst state that you have to deal with all of our all of our watchdogs out there? Go ahead, say it.
You probably want me to say Nevada, right?
Well, we already know that, but is Nevada the worst?
Well, you know, we had an experience that we weren't prepared to take on, and that was that we found out quickly that this flexibility of reducing your local funds was dependent upon what rating that you got from your state. And the Office of Special Ed Programs at the U.S. Department of Education had advised the states that when they made these ratings for the LEAs, they didn't have to make them public.
I know.
So we've spent 6 months sending FOIAs, public records requests to every state in the nation, just to get these ratings and post them on Idea Money Watch so that the public could have access to this information. And so, we have had states that have battled us, proposed to charge us hundreds of dollars to get this information.
I laugh because
I
know.
I have to say that, whether you want to hear this or not, there was only four states in the nation that posted these ratings on their state website, and Nevada was one of them.
Yeah, but posting it and having it true are two different things.
Well, posting the ratings and having the ratings mean something
right.
are two different things.
Exactly.
But again, the state, the blame here, as far as I'm concerned, lies squarely with the U.S. Department of Education, because they're the ones who told the states how to go about making these determinations, and the states took the bait and did what they said they could do.
The loopholes.
Well, if you give them the opportunity and show them the route to minimizing the obligation of considering any kind of real performance, then who isn't going to take the least of the path of least resistance?
Exactly.
I mean, I don't think the states are to blame here. If you read my blog on Idea Money Watch, that'll become very clear.
Very, very clear. Very clear. And that's IDEA
moneywatch.com.
Do you believe that this is subverting the intent of the legislature and the administration, what their intent was on this money?
Yes. To some degree. We've had conversations with the appropriators on the Hill. They did understand that putting the IDEA money in the Recovery Act would trigger this provision in the authorizing statute in IDEA, but they didn't know all of the other stuff that we've uncovered. And in fact, again, on Idea Money Watch, we have reported that the Senator Harkin, who was pretty much responsible for putting this money in the Recovery Act for IDEA, wrote to Secretary Duncan in this past summer saying that he was very dismayed to hear that states were kind of, reducing the criteria that they were using to judge LEAs and in order to give the LEAs more flexibility in reducing their local expenditures. The real problem here, though, is that the local expenditure, the reduced level, becomes the LEA's maintenance of effort level, so that they don't have to restore their local funding when the Recovery Act money goes away. So that's the real problem.
Yeah. I just, I can't understand. We're going to have to cut you a little bit short here. I mean, we're just so proud to have you on here, but I cannot understand why they're taking $14 million out of special education. Yes, they have, that's a loophole that the government said that they could do, filling in the gaps for something else, when our kids need it so bad.
Right.
And that is so upsetting. These school board people that are trustees, they've got to step up here. They really do, because they're the ones that are the bosses for the district.
Supposed to be.
Right.
And, yeah, and they're supposed to be. But within our district, the district runs the trustees. And it's supposed to be the other way around. Our trustees are really trying to run the district. But the problem is we don't have the experience there. But throughout the United States, for all who's listening, you've got to get to these board members and start having, giving them all this information, have them get on the archives for the show, because we're going to have on Mark in a couple minutes from Florida and what he's going through, he and his wife, right?
Yes. Well, Mark has done a great job down there of digging into what, again, the Broward County, which is, again, one of the biggest districts in the country. And they also have moved out millions and millions of dollars out of special ed spending. So
we got to stop this.
So I should say goodbye, and you can get on to Mark.
We sure will, Candace. Thank
okay.
you so much. You're the authority.
Thank you.
And we have so many other people that you have helped and trained to be good watchdogs, and we're so proud of you on
thank
what you're
you really.
Doing for our special needs kids. And I applaud you. Believe me on what you're doing. So,
thank you.
So we'll talk to you soon, okay?
Okay,
okay thank
friend.
You again. Bye-bye. She is the bulldog, I'll tell you. We're called watchdogs.
Puppies.
But we're the puppies. But when you get to Candace, Mark, if you're listening, the phone number is 702-609-7626. Is Mark on the line? Mark!
Hello, Rose.
Hey, how you doing, Watchdog?
I'm doing okay.
You know, we were just talking, you know, I'm sure you heard Candace.
I heard Candace.
I'll tell you, she's the bulldog.
She is a wonderful person.
Isn't she? We had her here on the show when she came to Las Vegas. We had to pull her away from slot machines, but we did have her on for an hour. Candace, we love you. I know you're listening. So, Mark, when you come out here to Vegas, you can be on a show. But we got
sounds
you
like,
now.
Sounds
now,
like a plan.
Yeah. What's your weather?
Our weather's gorgeous. We have a 75-degree sunny day, and people should come on down to Florida. Our vacationing is great, and our education. There's a website here called 50th No More, because we're the 50th state in the nation. In
no, we took
no,
it over.
We took it over.
Ah, darn it. That's what I was afraid of. I didn't like the name because nobody should celebrate and you're only 49th.
I know. We beat you. We went down to 50th. You're on 49. Or maybe we're co... What do they call it?
Cohabitating
the 50th.
Sounds
okay. So sad, doesn't it? Mark,
it does.
Your wife helped you with this stuff, doesn't she?
What?
Your wife. She helps you with all this. I have some questions for you. How did you and your wife become so involved in helping kids in special education?
Well, we have four kids, and our first kid was a plug-and-play kid. He just sailed through school. Our second daughter had some problems in school, and from first grade on through eighth, she was struggling, and then in eighth grade, they said at a transition meeting, you know, Julie's not college material because she's reading three grades behind, and we don't know how to help her. And I turned to Julie and said, what's your goal? And she said, to be the teacher I never had.
Wow.
And they said, well, honey, you could be a teacher's aide. And if you know my daughter, she's good. And she wanted to be a teacher. And my wife, who's got her master's in teaching and gifted and talented, became a mom on a mission. And she developed a program called the 3D Learner Program that helped Julie gain 4.2 years in her reading. And Julie's now got her master's in education from the University of Florida and is a nationally board certified teacher.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
And,
well,
then we got engulfed in this absolute hellhole called special education.
Yeah.
Where states try to do everything they can not to fund it, even though we in Florida have a terrific director of special education if they have Milachman. But the state itself doesn't fund education at all.
At all. See, we have the gamblers. I mean, not the gamblers, the casinos. And they sponsor some of the money, but because they're so bad off right now.
Well, property taxes.
And property taxes. And since property taxes are so bad, you know, because of the foreclosures, we're not getting anything.
Well, we got bushwhacked because Governor Bush cut spending on education and cut taxes, therefore cut spending on education. And then we have exactly the same problem you have here where funding is ratcheted down as you have the economic challenges of housing prices crashing through the floor.
Yeah, definitely. Now, I have a question that I gave to Candace. I'd like you and your wife, if she happens to be there, to answer. The stimulus money was intended to be used for innovative and effective programs, but this appears not to have happened. I know it hasn't happened here. And what have you seen, and what do you believe are the key lessons learned from that?
Okay. One, we have two counties that we watch closely. One's Broward County, which is where Fort Lauderdale, and one's Palm Beach County. In Broward County, they used a bulk of the money to just protect jobs, basically saying they would have terminated 27 ESE specialists, and they kept them. They would have gotten rid of 9 psychologists, and they kept them. They would have gotten rid of some other people, and they kept them. So they basically used the money, except for transition programs, almost exclusively for maintenance of effort. In Palm Beach County, they went exactly the opposite way. They used all of it for new programs, although it's been a disaster because they went off the cliff with stuff that made no sense to me.
Yeah.
And there were actually 1,000 people at two board meetings in a row where they basically brought back the changes. So in one case we saw status quo, keep everything. In the other case we saw bizarre changes made and have to be withdrawn.
Really?
And the lessons learned, I think, is, first of all, I never in my life would have ever increased special ed funding by this amount of money over this period of time with a 2-year window.
Why?
I mean, I think you know, if you would increase it over 4 years, you're going to have an educated ramp up. And the other thing is, I think when you take people like yourself and Candace and ourselves and other people, you have to have stakeholders involved. And you have to have people, draw people in when you're drawing up the legislation. And there's a great book, If We Can Put a Man on the Moon, you know, Why Can't We? And I can't remember the author of it, but he talks about government legislation and how the number one thing you want to do when smart people like Senator Harkin and other people are writing legislation is to bring in people from the devil's advocate side.
Oh, that's me.
And what are the issues that you see where this can be circumvented and write the law in a clever way that protects the kids? Because this should be about the kids.
Oh, we know that. You know it.
But if we bring in people, and we're going to be involved in some of the writing of ESEA, reauthorization of No Child Left Behind, we hope to play that devil's advocate role.
Good.
We hope the government will allow people to help them get what the intent of the law is through.
Exactly. Now, the thing that we have a problem here, because both of us being in the 50th, or 49th, whatever.
Right.
Which is no good anyway. The problem that we have here is that the district has run everything on its own.
Mm-hmm.
I did not know at the time that our superintendent has his own cabinet. Does your superintendent have his own cabinet?
No, I think, well, in Broward, we have Jim Notter, who's actually superintendent of the year. He's a good guy.
You mean of your state?
He's a Broward guy for the last 30 years.
Wait a minute. Wait. Back up, Mark. Back up. Our superintendent
is declaring
he is superintendent of the year.
Well, no, sorry. Superintendent of the year in Florida.
Oh, in Florida.
And he,
go ahead.
You know, here's the truth of the matter is, though, these guys were faced with a tough challenge. They were either going to lay off teachers or fund special education. And they chose to, in Brown's case, make sure they protected jobs. Now, I'm all for protecting jobs. But when you have over 60% of the kids failing the state-mandated exams, you've got to find the right balance that says we're going to do a lot of job saving and some innovative and effective programs.
Yeah, but Mark, I have to interrupt here. The problem we have here is our teachers will go into a seminar to do professional development. We had $4 million about 8 years ago, and we can't find it. Only 12 people use $4 million. The rest of it was used. We have no idea. I mean, the money goes anywhere it wants. But what I want to tell you is this, Mark, and I need to get information from you right now, is do your teachers get tested on any professional development class they have, which will show that they are good teachers and they are the ones that we want to save to keep the jobs?
You know, I'm going to have to say, I don't think so. Okay, the whole question of which teachers perform better, Broward County just rejected the race to the top because they rejected some of the provisions of teacher pay tied to high-stakes tests.
Yeah.
Which has its own problems. Okay, but the answer is pay is not tied to performance in Florida, although there is movement in the legislature to move in that direction. So I'm going to say I don't know the exact answer to the question. I can find it out.
Yeah.
But I think it's safe to say that pay is in no way related to performance at this juncture.
Well, one of the things that you may find when you start investigating is that highly qualified teachers, the standards for it, it's not mandated by the federal government. The federal government says you must be highly qualified. You must be highly qualified in math if you're teaching math. You must be highly qualified in languages if you're sick. Anyway, it doesn't say you have to know special education. In fact, we've had some rather loud negative comments, you know, to general education teachers are not special education teachers. We hear that all the time. Yet, statistically, 12 to 14% of the students they have in that class are they have disorders or disabilities.
Right.
That are affecting the learning.
That are affecting the learning. So, you know, No Child Left Behind, or the original legislation, was supposed to address the disadvantage, which the highest percentage was supposed to be the disabled.
Right.
And it hasn't been going so well in that respect. And
we're having a terrible time.
Right.
But
so
go ahead.
And it gets even more complicated when you try to follow the money on how it's being used, since there is very, very poor accountability.
Yeah, we have very bad accountability.
I'll say this, and the truth of the matter is, in Broward County, there's very good accountability of it. In Palm Beach County, we can't figure out what's exactly happening. So there's good accountability, but the question really is, how do you, when you write legislation that says you can do X and Y, how do we get the legislation written so that there's protection that says the intent of the law is followed?
I know.
And how do we make...
It all depends. Go ahead.
And also, the other big question is, in No Child Left Behind, students with disabilities were supposed to be, this year, 72% were supposed to be passing the test to get what's called adequate yearly progress. The state of Florida chose to take a totally different grading system, which looked at just how does the school do. So if you're in a good neighborhood, you got a good grade. And the result was this past year when Secretary Duncan came in and said, we're going to tie some money to whether or not you're making progress. All of a sudden, the school districts, especially Palm Beach in this case, shifted from the state system, which was put up by George, by Jeb Bush, to the federal system, where all of a sudden school districts like Palm Beach were getting A's 5 years in a row, were now scrambling because they weren't meeting the standards. So I think one of the huge benefits, in theory, of No Child Left Behind was for the first time, and I can tell you this, I've sat at board meetings where they ignored special ed for years, the first time people are starting to focus on special ed now. But the big risk is if the new legislation doesn't in some way keep the focus on special education, it's much too easy for boards to ignore our kids.
That's 100% correct. And that's what we're having here in Clark County. Same thing you're talking about. Exactly the same thing. Now, what is your opinion on the expanding the role of charter schools and virtual schools?
Well, that's a very interesting thing. I think charter schools provide a unique opportunity. We know some people that run charter schools here in Broward. I have some relatives that run charter schools in New York that are absolutely terrific. Absolutely, and I'm familiar with some in Boston. They're absolutely great. We in Florida do not have a very high standard for what a charter school looks like, and there's no requirement for them to be innovative or effective. So I would love to see in Florida and elsewhere standards set up that if you're going to give charters, you're going to give them to people who are really trying to innovate and, yeah, and be different and effective.
But that's our problem we're having here, and that's why I'm so intrigued, is that Charlene Green, who's the LEA for all this money here in Clark County, says they're not going to do new and innovative projects. They're going to do with the tried and true, quote unquote. Well, and what happened? We slipped from 49 to 50th.
Yeah, when you're the equivalent of a company going out of business, and when you have a lot of kids failing, you know, if 60%+, it doesn't matter whether it's Broward, Palm Beach, or the state of Florida, over 60% of the kids with disabilities are failing the state-mandated test. Tried and true is insane, and when Congress and the President and the Secretary of Education put in legislation that says this is going to be for innovative and effective programs, the next time they have to put in controls that say, and only for that. So you could have said, you can use half your money. By the way, the half the money stuff for maintenance of effort was incredible because almost every district in Florida meets those standards. So it wasn't a very high hurdle that said you could use 50% of it. But I'll be very honest with you. I would have been ecstatic if 50% had been spent on innovative and effective programs.
Yeah. I have to go out to commercial, Mark, but hold on, and we're going to be right back, okay?
Okay.
Hold on. Okay, everybody, we're back on the Rosemore Show with Mark, one of our... Whoops.
Oh.
We got something going on here. Are we okay now?
I'm hearing you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you. You're doing fine. We just had a beep there. Okay, school vouchers. Let's talk about that real quick. We only have about 2 minutes left, so
okay.
Let's talk about school vouchers.
Florida has probably one of the more aggressive programs in the country on school vouchers. They have what's called the McKay Scholarship, which allows children with disabilities who have been in the public school for the last 12 months and have an IEP to take their money and go to private schools.
Okay.
I think this is a highly controversial but could be a very effective program.
Uh-huh.
But a gentleman asked Jeb Bush last year at a meeting I attended with Margaret Spelling there, what Margaret Spelling, when she was Secretary of Education, would think of a program without any accountability. And she said, I would never support such a thing. And Jeb Bush just looked down at his feet, because the truth of the matter is the McKay Scholarship Program in Florida has no accountability for the kids, for the schools to show how the kids are performing. And we have some schools that are doing a fantastic job with these kids based on our observation and some that aren't. But nobody knows. And we're sending 22,000 kids to private schools with money that we have no idea whether it's a good investment or a bad investment.
See, Mark, you're right. You're right on that, because we have this same woman, Charlene Green, here. We name names here because we have documentation to prove everything we say. so don't get me wrong when we name names. Charlene Green applies for all these grants, and without the permission of the trustees, and they're sent in, and then they put on the agenda if the trustees don't want this, they'll pull it back. But the thing is, we have thousands of these grants out there for vouchers or for private schools or whatever, and we get all this money, but we never have the accountability of how did the project work? What is the end result?
And I think the one thing to say, because in our practice, the 3D learner practice, we look at kids that are right brain learners who often have tracking issues and attention issues. These kids are very different than the quote on tried and true where everything's all about phonics.
Yeah.
So our kids, as Daniel Pink writes in his book, A Whole New Mind, the 21st century will belong to the right brain learner if they can survive school.
Isn't that true? Well,
so we need to have innovative and effective programs.
I know. I know, and they're not doing it here in the Clark County School District. So I guess we're fighting on who's 49th and 50th, which is sad, but we're going to work on it to get it back up. So, Mark, we want to say thank you very much for being on the show.
Thank you, and thank you for everything you do.
Thank you. It's for our kids. That's all we care about. So, wait, you have a good evening, okay?
Sounds good.
Thank you. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we're signing off our show for the evening. So everybody, sit back, listen to I Need an Angel, and remember, whatever we do it for the kids. God bless.